This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. Save 20% at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
Ah yes, the magnificent Trolley Sour Bright Crawler, also known as Trollicus brightolus. The worm's captivating neon colour makes it an easy gummy prey.
Trolley!
It's a surprisingly sour, invitingly chewy, staggeringly snackable species unlike anything else found on this planet.
Eat me!
Delicious. Visit Trolley.com to shop now.
Trolley, eat me!
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome to the BBC Good Food Podcast with me, Orlando Murrin. In this episode, I'm speaking to Norman Muser about his favourite dish. Now, Norman is a chef, restaurateur and food writer, and he's joining us today from Leeds. Thank you for coming from Leeds.
Hello, Orlando.
Did you have a good journey from
Leeds to London?
I did, actually.
Yeah, it was a rather nice sunrise in the morning, so beautiful, clear sky. And yeah, so it was a quite exciting two-hour journey, actually, from Leeds.
We managed to attract our podcast guests from all around the country, but Leeds is a very nice place to have come from.
It is, isn't it?
So thank you. And then you have a restaurant there.
Yes, I'm actually run the kitchen for a Kuala Lumpur restaurant in Horsforth. So it's been running for more than a year now. And yeah, so we've been lucky that it's, because Malaysian cuisine is not very big in the UK, so we do have our regulars now.
You're kind of king of Malaysian cuisine in many ways, aren't you?
I'm not quite sure about that.
Well, you're popularising it.
Yes.
Well, how would you define Malaysian cuisine? Is it the flavourings or the approach or what?
I think, there's a lot of confusion about Malaysian cuisine because we kind of like a very diverse multi-ethnic. We have Chinese, Malay like me, Indians. And the best way to describe it is actually like almost similar to Thai cuisine. So we use lots of coconut milk, lemongrass, chilies, so tamarind, all sort of like the same ingredients, like a Thai.
And then in what way is it different from Thai cuisine, would you
say?
Well,
that's the thing, because when it comes to Thai cuisine, it's quite direct. And for Malaysian cuisine, like Malay like me, like we have all these curries. And for the Chinese, we have stir fries, for example. And for Indians, we have sort of curries as well. So it's kind of a diverse in Malaysia.
It's a kind of bringing together of these different strands.
Yes, yeah. So this is why, if anyone has been to Malaysia before, then I'll encourage them to go to Malaysia and see themselves.
Or they could come to your restaurant, couldn't they?
They can start by going to my restaurant first anyway. So, yeah.
Now, I want to know a bit about your family background. But before we get there, you've actually had quite a varied career background, haven't you?
I did.
You didn't start off as a chef.
No, I didn't. Well, it's a very typical Malaysian parents. They expected their children to grow up becoming like accountant, architect, engineer, doctor. So I did that. So I went to Portsmouth University and I got my degree in quantity surveying. So, and then after working as a surveyor for 10 years, then I gave up and became a chef. discreetly without even telling my late parents about it. So, and only when my late mom was due to visit me 2 weeks before, then I broke the news. I told her about my new career and she spent about an hour on the phone. She told me how stupid you are, you stupid boy, for giving up your good job with salary and everything. But I took that as a challenge. So I proved
to her. You've done it for 10 years, so you had to... You'd kind of paid lip service to the career.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I actually asked for my sponsor, the government, Malaysian government, to be to do architecture, actually, because I consider myself as being creative. So, but they didn't give me. They said they have too many architecture students. And so they gave me quantity surveyor, which I haven't got a clue what it was all about. So I just said yes to it.
But they were themselves in the food business, weren't they?
Yeah.
So tell me about your romantic food background.
Well, I grew up in a food business family. So I saw how my late parents worked so hard to raise us. So me with my sister, my brother, and I kind of exposed to all this food business. So I saw my late mom especially woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, went to the fresh market. Yeah, so I actually went with her once and she was very fussy about picking all the right ingredients for her kitchen. So yeah, so I was kind of exposed to all that.
And she was making food for her own stall at the market.
Yes,
and your father, was he involved in it as well?
Well, my father was working in at the bank, Standard Chartered Bank. And after he finished work at 5, then he helped my late mom out at the stall as well.
And so was that an evening market that she was cooking
Well,
for?
They did kind of everything. So they started in the morning with a morning stall selling nasi lemak, Malaysian national dish. And then in the afternoon, they did like the fritters, like banana fritters and all that. That was before. And then towards the, in 1990s, so they've got this canteen. That's when my dad kind of gave up his full-time job and started helping out my late mom and running this canteen.
So you've got a family tradition for giving up your day job and taking up food instead.
Actually, that runs in the blood, actually.
Do you have any regrets about this change of career?
No, never look back. I still remember my ex-boss, he asked me like, so what are you going to be then? So now you're giving up your job. And I told him that I'm going to become a chef. And he laughed at me. He said, you're going to come back to become a surveyor. And I never did. I think that's the thing. It's like, if you're passionate about something, you can achieve anything. Sky is only the limit.
And you're in Leeds now. Have you always been in the north or?
Well, I actually started in Portsmouth and then I moved to Bournemouth because my office as a surveyor was in Christchurch. So, and then after Bournemouth, I moved to London and I moved to Manchester. Then, after Manchester, moved back down to Birmingham, then moved to the Netherlands for 3 years and then came back. And then move to Leeds after that.
So it's a sophisticated cuisine with a lot of different things and flavours.
It is, yeah.
And I imagine that makes it very exciting to eat because it's registering at all sorts of different levels.
Yeah, so that's what it put a pressure on, for a chef like me, for Malaysian cuisine, like to create these beautiful layers that people can really appreciate. And this is something that I, try not to make my food so spicy. Because like if you can only taste the chili, you can't taste any other flavors. Something that I've failed to kind of convince Malaysians, because Malaysians, we grew up like eating spicy food. So for us, like there's a kick. It has to be a kick.
Yes, I think that some people say they don't like chili at all, which is a shame. But if it just does blast you, it stops you enjoying the other flavors, doesn't it?
Yeah. So this is something that I always share with my cookery class students about, like the tips how to cut down the spiciness and all that. So I mean, there's lots of tips in Malaysian kitchen as well that I always share with my students.
I bet they learn a lot from you.
About measuring all the quantities as well. From my previous profession as a surveyor,
Well, I think that professional chefs do weigh and measure very carefully because it's the only way that you can't cook every plate for yourself. So someone else has got to do it. So they've got to recreate it the way you do it. They've got to measure it, haven't they?
Yeah, that's
true. Or have very good eyesight or something.
It's just like with all the ingredients that we have here, especially like different type of dried chilies, for example. That's my favorite to use in my cooking, my recipes. That you have to be careful what type of dried chilies that you use.
And they're different heats,
flavors. Yes, exactly. So there are more than 400 different types of dried chilies. So the smaller it gets, the spicier it'll be. Just
gosh,
remember.
And how many do you use in the restaurant? How many different types of dried
chili?
Well,
we have a bag of these dried chilies. We tend to use that, I think, about a kilo a week. So it's a lot of chilies that we use.
Now, you have something very... I want to ask you about your books in a moment. Okay. You have something very interesting on your CV, which is a Formula One. So
yes.
I can see you on the racing track, Norman. What were you, what were you doing there?
Well, this is what, like... After I told people that I joined Formula One, people thought that I'm one of the drivers, but I'm definitely...
Go on, you can tell our listeners that. They believe
so
you.
So I was there as a race chef. So I was appointed by the founder of Asia, Tony Fernandez, to join Formula One. So at that time, he owned a Lotus team. So I did 12 races.
So did they have good appetites, the races?
Well, my duty was... Yeah,
the drivers.
No, the drivers, they only allowed to have plain pasta and put chicken 2 hours before the race. That's all they're allowed to have.
Well, that's not really going to extend your chefing skills.
Well, it's not the drivers that I have to cook for only, but for the entourage. So, for example, that we had Yano Trulli as one of the drivers. And so he always bring like his entourage, like about 20 Italians, and they love Malaysian food. I mean, I have to cook for them, and all the VIPs I cook for take that. So I met all this like all the celebrities, VIPs, and all that. But the fun bit was like obviously like to travel around the world with the team.
Do you know what really drives me mad about motor racing? That thing where they shake up the champagne and spread it everywhere.
That's such a waste, isn't it?
It's terrible. I mean, it is real champagne, is it?
It is, yeah.
What's the matter with them?
It's a tradition.
So objectionable.
Yeah. See, but unfortunately, this is something that I thought I'm going to be witnessing all that. But unfortunately, I was stuck in the kitchen and all I can hear is like, meow, meow. That's all. Because as soon as they finish the race on Sunday, so we have to do the pack down. So we have to cook for 200 members of the team. And so for me, like, I have to cook like a big pot of curry, just enough for everyone. And at the same time, like, packing up everything and ready for the next race. So, for example, like, when we were in Melbourne and it was a back-to-back with the Kuala Lumpur. So we flew from Melbourne to Kuala Lumpur. We arrived at 6 o'clock in the morning and 8 o'clock in the morning, we were in the kitchen already. So people might think it's a glamorous thing to like to do like a Formula One, but it wasn't.
This episode is brought to you by Rakuten. If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Samsung, Expedia, and Sephora. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home too. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
So, but it was a good experience, yeah.
I think it's fairly exciting, really.
Yeah.
I can still live without champagne. Now, how did you get it? Why would you need to, with all that happening in your life, why would you want to write books?
Well, this is something that, I love writing. So, and then thanks to Guild of Food Writers as well, actually, I met so many friends.
That's the Guild of Food Writers.
Mm-hmm. So, I remember that during the award events, I have to guide you to find all the rooms because you get lost.
You've got a much better sense of direction than I've got.
Yeah, oh, that
comes from your
really...
from your racing days, probably, yeah. Going around the track.
So it was a really good evening, I must say, that to have Delia Smith and also Jamie Oliver tonight.
Well, you're among them. As a food writer, you're a fully-fledged food writer yourself. How many books have you done?
So far, well, the first one was self-published. So my third one, Bowl Food, just been released in October. So,
and very beautiful it is as well.
Thank you. Awful.
And you're going to take us through one of the recipes a bit later. But what do you get out of writing that you don't get from actually cooking live?
This is something that I always like. I always consider myself as a storyteller. So I like to tell stories about my upbringing. For example, like in Amazing Malaysia, lots of like memories I captured with my late mum. And that's something that now that I've read the book again and... You know, like all these memories been captured in all most recipes actually that belong to my late mum in Amazing Malaysian. So I managed to kind of capture all these memories that I spent time cooking with her. Bowl Food is more like a travel with friends as well because I live, so that was written in 5 different cities during the COVID time pandemic. Ah. So it's lots of like kind of a bittersweet memories. And so I met many friends in the Netherlands and also like in London. Yeah, so it's lots of like nice stories, especially with Maureen Duke. She's 87 years old. She's from Burma originally. And then she moved to the to London when she was 16. So it's like 3 of her recipes. She allowed me to include 3 of her recipes.
Fantastic. What a great legacy. Now, will you tell us about the dish that you're going to give us the recipe for?
Oh, this is a rather, well... It has kind of a beautiful memory about me saving my school pocket money. It's called the Night Market's Big Chicken. Okay, so I grew up in a humble village in Butterworth because, so Penang was like the first kind of a area, the state that was colonized by British. So you've been to Malaysia before,
I
right?
have, but Butterworth sounds English, doesn't
yeah,
it? Butterworth
very,
sounds like it's in Cumbria.
Cumbria. Well, we don't have quite a Cornwall or Devon, but we have, it was founded by Francis Light, so the British officer. So, and so we have all these like wonderful English names that we retain. So the streets and all that. So Butterworth is where I grew up. I was born. So there's a village where we had this night market. So I saved my school pocket money and then just bought this chicken. So back then, like I was given like 50 cents, that's about 10p, so to go to school. And I didn't share it with my sister and my brother because they were looking with jealousy. It's like, no, I'm not sharing with them. So
that was what you saved up your pocket money for.
I did.
How sweet.
Yeah. So
And the night market, is that a normal thing in Malaysia?
Market? So back
what
in
19... What kind of part of the night is it? What were you doing up in the night?
After the night? Well, unfortunately, everyone gone home with a full tummy. So that was introduced in 1980s. I still remember that when I was about 12 years old, and the first one was introduced to my village. And yeah, so it's just like because people, you know, most people will be at work during the daytime, so they don't have time to go to the market. So they introduced this night market. And it's nice for like a family gathering as well, because they have food stalls, and so you can get like all this fish from fishmonger. Yeah, so everything, almost everything. So instead of like having a morning market, so they do have morning market, and they also have a night market.
And it's all lit up, and it has a Does it have music? Do you have a bit of?
Oh yeah, it's always like a loud music, like from the stall selling. Yeah, so all sort of things.
What makes this chicken worth saving your pocket money up for
buy? It's something about this the flavor, the smoky flavor of the marinade, especially. It's
Having eaten it, did you then get your mum to recreate it for you, or did you recreate it yourself?
No, I recreated it myself, actually. Yeah, yeah. So because I remember this is the thing, because when you go to the night market like that, you can see how they cook it in front of you. And so I still remember that, how they, you know, put together with the bamboo sticks and all
you
that.
You were watching, weren't you?
I was.
Were you like noting down how many, what the spices were,
it,
and everything?
Just like in my memory, if you ask me how many kind of like tables they have, just amazing how it kind of like captured in my mind. Like I still remember vividly all these memories, like the night market.
And I think you said that they barbecued it, but you yes. devised a way to do it in the oven.
Yes, yeah, because as it's suitable for the summer barbecue. I mean, you can always barbecue it, yeah. So, and then the important thing is like you need to pass it like about two or three times just to create the layers.
In the recipe, I was interested that you marinate it first,
yes.
and then you put it in the oven or on your barbecue, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then do you use the marinade again or do you start with the sauce? Because you've got a marinade going and you've got a sauce going and they're two different compounds, aren't
yes.
they?
Yeah, so you marinate with the just turmeric with a bit of salt as well. Okay, so and then after that, you use the sauce to baste it. So you create like a... So with the sauce, you have to baste it two or three times.
Are you glazing it with
yeah,
the sauce?
Yeah, glazing it, right. Yeah, with the sauce, yeah. So that's why it creates like a beautiful layers of all these wonderful flavours.
Is it a common dish or is it particular to your night market?
It's a very common dish for the night market, actually. It's like satay, for example. We have like satay, you don't eat it every night, but you do like a once a week or so. So same thing with this baked chicken as well.
And the important components of the dish, apart from a good chicken, obviously, mm-hmm. what are the important spices in it or the important flavourings?
Lemongrass, chilli, obviously, and tamarind. Okay, so it kind of give a like a spicy, sweet and sour flavour to it.
Tamarind, people get worried by tamarind. There's the paste.
Yes.
Is that what we're talking about, the paste that comes in a jar or what tamarind are you talking about?
Well, this is something you need to be careful because the three types of tamarind that you can get. So first one is the paste, like very thick paste.
Yeah.
And the second one is the concentrate, quite runny. And the third one comes in a pulp that you need to mix with water.
Gosh, how do you know which one you're buying normally?
Well, you can tell that because the paste one is like a thick, like a very thick paste, like a very dark brown.
And really, so like gummy? Gum. Yeah. Like, yeah.
So if you're using so for my recipe, just use about a teaspoon only.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be quite, you know, overpowering.
Because it's got quite a kick to it, tamarind. Is it lime-like?
Yeah.
If you don't
have that, you can always just replace with lime or lemon. Yeah. It's actually really good for your voice, actually. Because if you have a sore throat, no, it's not for your voice. I mean, if you're having a sore throat, for example, drink tamarind juice. It's good to cut down the temperature, the body temperature. Yeah.
So that's the paste. What was this? And the second one that you mentioned.
So the tamarind. So the paste. There's a concentrate.
Concentrate.
Yeah. Concentrate is the one that's quite runny. So it's quite pale in color, brown color.
Okay. And how much of that would you use in your recipe?
A tablespoon. And with the pulp, so you just need get the knob up of it. So just mix with 100 ml of water. So that will give you like a tamarind concentrate.
Right.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Did you follow that?
Well, I did follow it, but I think it's a confusing ingredient for people and if we don't use it every time. Yeah. Which would you recommend to start with tamarind paste?
Yes.
That comes in a little jar, doesn't it?
It depends if you kind of like a regular, if you cook a lot in the kitchen, so paste is actually really good.
The lemongrass is standard, lemongrass that we can now buy.
Funny enough, because I moved to the UK in 1994, to further my study, and it's very difficult to get lemongrass in the supermarket. But now you can easily get this lemongrass everywhere.
Well, normal when I was a child, you couldn't get garlic.
Oh, really?
Olive oil from the chemist. It's the famous one. You had to get the olive oil from the chemist because it was to put in your ears.
Oh, wow.
That was before my time.
What does it do to your ears then?
It loosens up your ear wax.
Okay.
But we're here to talk about cooking, not medical. Medical issues.
Not medical, no.
Now, you pound all your ingredients in a pestle and mortar, do you?
Well, that's traditionally. If you want to do it authentic way, that's how you do it. But for my recipe, I use like just a hand stick blender.
With those hand stick blenders, I don't get on with them very well because you need enough stuff for it to catch. Otherwise, it just flings it around.
Exactly.
Does it? Have you? You've got enough stuff here, have you?
Yes.
To catch it?
Definitely.
And then is the trick to use a small goblet thing?
You can use that one. But what I notice is like small goblet, fruit processor.
I meant the little goblet thing that you put the plungy. Into.
So if you're using that one, the best is to add about 2 tablespoons of water.
Yeah.
Yep, just to give a bit of moisture.
So that it catches. It whizzes it round.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, if you have pestle and mortar, it's the best actually.
Yeah.
Because instead of slicing it, you crush all the ingredients to release more aroma.
And you mentioned chili. Any particular type of chili if we get a choice? We don't always get the choice, do we?
Yeah, well, you can always just use fresh chilies if you don't have any dried chilies. I prefer dried chilies because of the colour. And then you keep the seeds.
Keep the seeds for the heat.
Yes, yeah. For the heat. And then just make sure that when you use hand stick blender, just make sure it's as fine and smooth. The paste, yeah.
Okay, well, it's all very exciting. I'm surprised that you get a better colour with a dried chilli. You'd think that would be duller colour.
Because in the fresh chilli, there's lots of moisture in there. And then with the dried chilies, you know, like it comes as a dark kind of a red colour. So you get more colour from it.
If you had any left over, what would you use it for?
Sandwich. Or you can turn it into like a pulled chicken and make it into soup or something. That would be nice.
And something else I wanted to ask you. BBC Good Food is very, very keen on Sunday lunches. We're trying to save the nation's Sunday lunches. Do you ever have time for Sunday lunch?
Well, to be honest, I skip my lunch. I normally have like a toast with peanut butter. And that peanut butter has to come from the Netherlands because it's the best.
Is it really? What, peanut butter from the Netherlands? I've never heard of that.
They're crazy. Well, they're mad about peanut butter.
Well, I wish we could mention the brand name here.
No, we can't.
We're getting into terrible trouble.
So
my producer is glaring at me. I will be asking Norman for the brand, name in Dutch.
Every time I go back to the Netherlands, because my sister lives in The Hague, so I always bring like 2 kilos of peanut butter with me, back with me to Leeds.
Fantastic. Well, next time, could you bring 2 kilos plus extra jar for me?
You have a choice, either the one with the smooth one or the one with the bits.
I'll have whichever you suggest, smooth or crunchy.
Crunchy. Yeah, crunchy is the best.
Surprise me.
Oh, you can have both anyway.
Fantastic. Now I've got some quick fire questions for you.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right. So you're not allowed to think about these. You just have to say. Your most well-thumbed cookery book?
Bersama by my friend Francis Kijk in the Netherlands. I keep asking her to translate it into English.
Oh, it's no good. We can't buy it then.
I know.
It's called what?
Bersama. Bersama means together in Malay or Indonesian. So she's half Indonesian, half Australian. And she lives in the Netherlands. And yeah, she launched this book 2 years ago, I think, yeah.
What music do you cook to?
Very loud, upbeat music. It has to be like a disco. Do you know, like back in 90s and all that? So if you remember.
Yeah, I do remember.
Push the Feeling On or something, Nightcrawlers.
Is that in the restaurant as well?
Yeah. So I'm
so
a DJ.
You have big loud music in
the restaurant. We have a speaker. So I'm
a
DJ.
What do the guests think about that?
They have no choice. They have to listen to my choice of music. So now, I put on a remix of Taylor Swift and all that. So anything remix, upbeat, because we need that on busy night in the kitchen. Yeah.
Taylor Swift has come up before. That's a popular choice, it seems, for chefs.
Yeah.
Now, your favorite great cheap eats restaurant or pub or market?
My favorite in Manchester, actually, cause it's called Seoul Kimchi, and it's run by a family, so a Korean family. And yeah, so they know that my favorite is always this, it's almost similar to a bento box and have a bit of everything of all Korean dishes. Kimchi is the best one, yeah.
And the restaurant, the place is called
Seoul Kimchi. Yeah.
And something that's always in your fridge?
Smoked mackerel, because I love this salted fish from Malaysia, but we can't get this salted fish. So
that's the nearest you can get?
Yes.
I love smoked mackerel.
Yeah, it's just beautiful.
It is very salty though. Really, it packs a punch of
Which
salt.
One do you have that? The one with the pepper?
I just have the straight kind, actually. I've had the peppercorn one, but it's amazingly potent flavour, isn't it?
It's always put in everything. Sometimes make a sandwich, sometimes make it as an egg fried rice, as a topping for my soup and everything. Yeah, so anything can be smoked mackerel.
I've used it for kedgeree, actually. It makes a very, very tasty kedgeree, if you like kedgeree.
Yeah, okay.
Now we have your confessions.
Okay.
Your biggest cooking disaster.
Valentine's Day, I hate it. I hate it so much. Sorry, all the lovers. Because my first one was for my restaurant in Manchester, and it was a disaster because I had customers waited for 2 hours, and some customers walked out from the restaurant because we were not prepared. And yeah, so if anyone served me pineapple fried rice, I would just throw up right away. Right away.
Was that what caught you out that day?
Yeah. I can't even see it. I can't even... like, yeah.
I don't know whether I like the sound of...
No.
What were you doing making that?
It's a famous Thai dish, actually, pineapple fried rice. Yeah, we're supposed to serve it beautifully in like half of the pineapple, put the fried rice in there, and I seriously can't see that. Or even anyone mentioned about it, I'm just going to start throwing up.
Now, a food you've never tried?
Chicken feet. I don't know how people can eat that. It's just,
is there anything to eat on a chicken foot? Or do you crunch it? Do you crunch bones?
No. Well, actually, they remove the bones. I have no idea how they remove the bones.
Filleted chicken feet?
Yeah, apparently it's like full of like a... Is that collagen? Or it's not collagen, it's like...
I think it is the kind of gluey.
Yeah. Stuff. So, and then my friends, like he loves this chicken feet. And he always like make fun of it by having like all the legs coming out from his mouth. Like it looks rather awful.
Yeah, yes, because does it look like does it look like you're eating a kind of tan-coloured spider or something?
I know, it's just like so awful. I don't know how people can eat that. My sister loves it. And yeah, so it's like Marmite. You either like it or hate it, just like that. Have you tried it before?
No. No, and I'm not putting it on my list to try. I'm with you on that one. Now, your guilty pleasure.
Well, when I feel a bit low, I always watch something inspiring. So Legally Blonde is something
Blonde, now we've heard it, haven't we?
Yeah, but...
That's Reese Witherspoon.
Reese Witherspoon. Yeah. Something about like boosting your confidence about how she fought like to get to, you know, to Harvard University. So I love that bit when, you know, I love people like who always fight, you know, to get what they want. So that's something that I've... Yeah, so
it's your life story, isn't it?
It is. Not in pink, though. Not in pink.
And finally, we have a nice upbeat question so that we can send our lovely listeners off with a bounce in their step. What makes you optimistic for the future?
With what I have at the moment, I think I'm to be honest, I'm so glad that I moved back to the UK because with the book out and also as a tutor for Wagamama Chef Academy, and also I'm working my way towards like becoming a Malaysian food ambassador. I was the Kuala Lumpur food ambassador, and in the same year I was offered to be a Malaysian food ambassador, but I turned it down because at that time I think I wasn't ready yet. So I'm kind of ready now. So that's something that I'm looking forward to.
Gosh, so it's a kind of career spin that you're on.
It is.
Well, listeners, remember that you met Norman here.
Yes.
It's been an enormous pleasure to talk to you today, Norman. Thanks,
Orlando.
Much.
Thank
lovely,
you.
Lovely to see you.
Thank you, Orlando.